This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 96. Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm Sean, and I'm joined as always by Adam. How are you doing, Adam?
I don't have any more cheesecake.
Oh, man.
Because I ate it all.
Yeah. We're going to get started with the Tactical Dog and Fitness Report. 26.2 dog walking miles and only one day at spin class. I had a doctor's appointment on Monday and an MRI on Thursday. Wow, those things are loud.
Yeah. It's all the, you know, the witch doctory stuff that they're doing back there where they're banging on drums and stuff.
Yeah. I don't think there are actually any real science to this. I think somebody's been back in the back, like throwing bones and stuff.
Yeah, that's what's going on.
The knee doctor says that it's unlikely that there's anything really seriously wrong with my knee. We're looking at some exercises to strengthen a muscle to put my kneecap back where it belongs, if that makes any sense. It's much more complicated than that.
That makes sense to me.
It's something to do with my kneecap not being quite in the right place because the way I'm walking, and that's the reason I'm walking that way is because I have a muscle that's not doing its job.
Interesting.
But the MRI was to make sure that I didn't also have a torn meniscus. We'll see how that comes out. But I think the likelihood of it being a torn meniscus is relatively low by the way he was talking. So,
well, that's good. Did I mention I don't have any more cheesecake? Because I ate it all?
You're bringing me down here.
I also don't have a problem with my knee because I walked 26.2 miles last week, which I didn't do.
Walking doesn't bother my knee. It actually is the bike riding that's killing me.
Oh, really?
When my muscles get really strong from bike riding is when my knee starts hurting.
Oh, interesting.
We'll see how it goes, but I really don't think there's actually a problem. It's just, I think they call it patella femoral something or other. It's just okay. The patella and the femur, head of the femur rubbing on each other the wrong way. It's all pretty simple.
Well, it's too hot here to do anything. It's been almost 100 degrees all week with 9,000% humidity. It's one of those, you walk out at 5 a.m. and you immediately start sweating before you even get to the bottom of the stairs.
Yeah, it's not doing that here yet, but I've come back from walking the dog in the morning a time or two last year, just as soaked as if I'd done it at noon. So, yeah, I know how you feel.
Yeah.
Well, now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. This week, Aaron is preparing an entire community to protect itself.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette.
So, hey, Aaron, I haven't really heard much from you recently. Where have you been?
Wow. I have been buried, inundated with requests from this project that I accidentally started and has taken on a life of its own. And it's called Project Blazing Sword.
So, what's that? What? I'm trying to pretend I don't know, but I do know well. It's been hilarious watching this on Facebook. Oh my goodness. I can't contain myself. I can't even be a good interviewer. I'm just going to say it is awesome. It is hilarious. So you sound frazzled. You sound like you're not even with us at this point. Why is that? You're just buried. You're getting a lot of people who are, what is this project?
Yeah, I am brain fried. Okay. So a brief summary for those who haven't been following on at home. So there was the massacre in Orlando over the weekend, and in the wake of that, some wonderful bloggers, including Nikki Kenyon, and in fact you, started putting out blanket invitations across social media that if anyone in the LGBTQ community wanted to learn how to use firearms for safety, that you would take them for free. You'd pay for the range fees, you'd pay for the ammo, you do all these things because you want these people to be trained. And on Monday, I had the idea of, hey, what would happen if I made a master list of all these people who volunteered? And I thought it would be something that would be pretty easy to do, pretty quick, and that would be my blog post on Monday. I'd do my good deed, and then life would go on. And oh my God, it's taken on a life of its own. I was pretty much doing that for all Monday afternoon and evening. And what started as a Facebook post turned into this massive undertaking where I ended up with no fewer than two assistants, and now we're putting entries onto Google Maps. And the number of gun owners who have stepped forward to volunteer their time, their effort, their ammunition is just phenomenal. We currently have over 500 pins in the map. And that doesn't mean volunteers because, example, we've got one pin in Houston and there are at least half a dozen people in Houston who have volunteered to teach. And so it's just this phenomenal thing that's taken off. I'm just completely buried under this because not only has it been shared multiple times on Facebook, but we've been mentioned on Instapundit. We've had it started with an interview from Chicks on the Right, and that was Monday evening they did that, and it went live on Tuesday. And Larry Correa mentioned us on Facebook. Then he mentioned us again on his blog. And yeah, so we've been Instapundited. We were on PJ Media. We've been imagered. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. I am inundated, and it's a wonderful problem to have, but it's just overwhelming. This morning, I woke up, and there were 200 unanswered emails. And the first 50, I sent away to my assistants. And by the time I got back from lunch, it was up to 200 again. So I am now just ruthlessly forwarding all emails to my assistants just so I can keep my head above water. And the wonderful thing about this is we're only in day three. It's hard for me to keep track at this point. And we've already gotten some hits. I know several people who have told me they've gotten emails from interested people. In fact, you are one of them.
I did. I've had two different people email me. One of them is half of a gay couple, and the other one is a separate person. So that's, it looks like three people in, for me, if it's only been maybe 24 to 48 hours, maybe 36, I don't know. It's not been that long, not nearly as long as it has been for you. And I've already gotten two emails from two different people for a total of three people that I'm probably going to take to the range for the range orientation and, you know, sort of a meet and greet on Wednesday after the show goes live.
That's great. And, you know, if it can save just one life, Sean, it's worth it.
Yeah.
What we are doing here is we are building a community, and that is what prepping is. You build a community, and you pass those skills along. And so I am uniting my two disparate communities, the gun community, actually three, the gun community, the prepper community, and the LGBTQ community. I'm getting them all together. So that now these people who may be in fear of their lives for their lifestyle, they can prepare themselves. They can learn these skills so that they won't be in fear. And hopefully they will join the firearm community. I think that's just this wonderful combining of all of my interests.
Great. So, I mean, this is just Facebook and Google and stuff. Has it gotten any beyond that? Any traction anywhere?
Well, yeah, it's actually gotten past the internet and social media at this point. I have been approached by someone from the BBC because they have an interview team in Orlando, and they were covering the events and the vigil, and they wanted to talk to someone who was active in both the gun community and the LGBTQ community. And because of my position with Blazing Sword, they thought I was the person to ask. I'm meeting with them on Friday, and I'm going to talk to them about my experiences. And I'm also going to hopefully teach them to shoot. And it's going to be really fun to teach some British people how to shoot guns.
Yeah.
I have gotten requests from a local TV station. They want to do an interview. The local newspaper wants to talk to me. We might have the newspaper people coming down and taking pictures of me with the BBC people. That'll be cool. And hopefully this isn't jinxing it, but I have gotten an email from Steven Crowder, who does Louder with Crowder. He's interested in talking with me. He wanted to know if I'd be on his show. At this point, I'm booked solid through Friday, and then people are taking the weekend off, and then I'm set to do more stuff on Monday. But hopefully it'll just be even bigger and better and probably crazier.
Well, once it gets rolling, I think it'll start being a self-assembling sort of project. We'll figure out how to do our part, but you've put together a framework there, and having that framework was really what we needed.
Well, like I have been saying, it's not anything that anyone else in our community couldn't have done. I guess I just had the idea first.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
I did get sort of a, hey, this is what happened after the interview with BBC. She thinks it went pretty well. Nothing really got off track. When the reporter tried to ask her questions about things she wasn't prepared to deal with, she just said, hey, I'm not prepared to deal with that, which is pretty much what we told her. Just don't let them take you off track. If they try to take you off track, just say, hey, look, let me get you to an expert. And that's what she did. She stuck to, you know, stay in your lane. And one of the things that was pretty neat is that Nikki chimed in on that one, our own Nikki. Nikki chimed in. Nikki was actually a trainer in the Army for people on how to deal with the media, because what she did was she worked for Armed Forces Radio.
Oh, good.
She taught people how to deal with that. And Nikki's like, oh, you did exactly correctly. This is exactly what we tell people to do. I wish other people would actually do what we tell them to do. So good job. We'll let you all know when BBC plays the interview with her. That should be pretty cool. Felons behaving badly. Moore County man charged in May kidnapping and rape, officials say. Dateline Carthage, North Carolina. A 33-year-old Vass man has been arrested and charged with rape in connection with a May 15th kidnapping and sexual assault, Moore County officials said. On May 15th, a 26-year-old woman told Moore County Sheriff's deputies she was kidnapped and raped. Suspect was arrested Friday in connection with the assault, officials said. Suspect was charged with felony second-degree forcible rape and felony first-degree kidnapping. He is being held at the Moore County Detention Center under $500,000 secure bond. So, what kind of person do you think just, you know, suddenly snaps one day and decides to kidnap and rape some poor woman that he sees on the street?
A regular, normal person with a day job.
Right. A Boy Scout, probably a Boy Scout leader.
Yes.
Pillar of the community.
Yes.
DWI level 3, misdemeanor, non-class code, resisting officer, misdemeanor class 2, speeding to elude arrest, felon class H, and felony breaking and entering, felon class H.
All right. Well, he's graduated.
Yeah, well, you know, second degree sexual assault of any kind, I think, nets you at least 20 years in prison. First degree is a life sentence. First degree, you pull a weapon in the, you know, you do this with a dangerous weapon, it's a life sentence in the state. That's like the, I think that's like the mandatory. You just get life.
Oh, good.
He's going to be spending some good quality time behind bars. Once again, the anti-gunners are out in force screaming about things they can't even define. Tiffany made a phone call to her good friend, well-respected firearms trainer Tom Givens, to get some detail on exactly what an assault rifle is. She recorded the conversation for us.
Could you start by introducing yourself to those listeners who may, because they've been buried under a rock for the past 40 years, have never heard of Tom Givens or Rangemaster?
Oh, that would be terrible. I've been a firearms instructor for over 40 years, full-time for 20 years. Been studying this stuff for about 50-plus years. Certified as an expert witness on firearms training in state and federal courts all over the U.S. Written 5 published textbooks on the subject, about 150 magazine articles, and I could go on, but you got a pretty good idea by this point. I've got some clue about firearms, probably.
Excellent. And do you have any students who have ever been involved in defensive firearms incidents?
Well, the ones we know about that have reported back to us or been reported to us through law enforcement channels, we just had number 66 in April.
Wow. And those are 66 incidents where you've been able to talk to students and get a good firsthand idea of what the facts were of those situations and what happened to them?
Yep. I was able to interview most of them. 3 of them weren't able to interview because they're quite dead. They were the 3 who didn't have the gun. The 63 out of 66 that were armed when they had their fateful day prevailed, and only 3 of them were injured or wounded, and they all recovered. But unfortunately, 3 didn't listen to my advice and were caught without a gun and out in public, and all 3 were killed. They were killed in separate street robberies, and I might point out all three were killed after complying with robbers' demands and basically executed after they were robbed.
So I think it's safe to say in a nutshell that you know what you're talking about when it comes to these matters, which is why I wanted to get you on the line and ask you a couple of questions about something else that involves firearms, unfortunately. Anyone who's been anywhere near a TV recently has heard about the latest tragic shooting, or more specifically, terrorism incident that's happened on U.S. soil. It's a terrorism incident that involves firearms, reportedly one handgun and one long gun. One thing that I have noticed with the news coverage is repeated use of a particular phrase, and that phrase is assault rifle. Now, I am not a rifle person, but I suspect that there needs to be some clarification around this term. To folks who don't have any experience in firearms at all, let alone rifles, can you tell us what, from your perspective as a firearms expert, that term means, assault rifle?
Sure. It actually has a very specific definition. It's just the media don't bother to learn what it is. Everybody I've heard commenting in the media today has been spouting complete and utter BS that just outright lies. You could forgive a layman for being totally ignorant of this, but people who are supposedly professional journalists should be able to find this information. It's a 3-minute Google search would educate people on this a good bit, but they don't seem to be inclined to bother with that. Let me give you the backstory on this. In World War II, the German Army's primary weapon was a bolt-action rifle. 5 rounds, you have to manually cycle a bolt to fire another cartridge. And they were involved in not just at war with us, but on the Eastern Front with Russians. They were involved with huge mass armies of Russians. And that type of rifle just wasn't up to the type of fighting involved on the Eastern Front. So in 1943 and 1944, they came up with the STG-43 and the STG-44, which was a radical new concept at the time. It was a semi-automatic rifle with a large magazine, but also a selector switch to enable it to fire fully auto, in other words, a machine gun. They also came up with a new cartridge for it. The bolt-action infantry rifle used a very powerful cartridge that was also used in their machine guns. It was actually far more powerful than needed, which means the ammunition was larger than it had to be for an infantryman to carry around, and more recoil, harder to shoot well. So they came up with the idea that if we had a gun that would shoot more rounds faster, be less powerful so we could control it better, it would be useful in these mass attacks on the Eastern Front. So they came up originally the STG-43, used a new cartridge, which was much smaller than the battle rifle cartridge, less powerful. And so they could put 30 of them in a magazine, much like the modern, for instance, AR-15 has a 30-round magazine available for it. Less powerful cartridge, so it recoiled less, so they could shoot from the shoulder in full automatic fire, and a selector switch to allow it to shoot in machine gun mode. In other words, hold the trigger back, and it continues to fire very rapidly until you let go of the trigger, or it runs out of ammunition, one or the other. They called it the STG-43. The STG was the abbreviation of Sturmgewehr, and that literally transmitted is storm rifle, as in storming an enemy position. The idea was that on the offense, when your group is attacking a fortified position, in the latter phase of that, as everybody's rushing forward to overrun it, everybody would turn the selector to full auto, and you would have this huge, overwhelming volume of fire directed at the enemy, which would cause them theoretically to keep their heads down while you advanced and overrun their position. It was just a huge volume of fire. In fact, they weren't really planning on hitting anything. The idea was just to have such a huge volume of fire that the other side would hunker down and allow you to take ground. And the defensive side, when the other side's attacking your position, it allowed you to put such a storm of lead out in front as to slow down or break up their advance on your fortified position. So they called it a storm rifle. In 1943, 1944, when the Allies first captured a few of them, they translated that into English as assault rifle. So that's the origin of the term. It kind of goes back to World War II, and it refers specifically to a rifle that shoots a less powerful cartridge than a full-size battle rifle and has fully automatic capability. Calling an AR-15 or an AK-47 that you can buy in a gun store in this country, which is a semi-automatic weapon, an assault rifle, is silly. They don't have the full auto capability. They fire one round per pull of the trigger. Now, one commentator I heard earlier today said the AR-15 was capable of firing 300 rounds in 9 seconds. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. What it's referring to is the cyclic rate of the fully automatic military version, which, again, we're not talking about here. We're talking about semi-automatic weapons in this country.
Right.
The fully automatic machine gun version has a cyclic rate of 600-700 rounds a minute, but that doesn't mean you can actually fire 600-700 rounds a minute. It means that's how fast the action can cycle in full auto. It's only got a 30-round magazine. It can't fire 300 rounds out of a 30-round magazine. With the semi-automatic version here, the fastest you can work the trigger, not planning on hitting anything, just the fastest you can physically work the trigger and make the gun fire is about 5 rounds per second. So it would take you 6 seconds to get 30 rounds out of it, not 300 rounds in 9 seconds. Maybe it's the new math, but it ought to be obvious to anybody that that's just baloney, that the gun is simply not capable of things the press attributes to it. Basically, the version that you buy in a gun store here is just a modern sporting rifle. It's just a semi-automatic rifle, which have existed since the turn of the 20th century. They're well over 100 years old. There's nothing new about the technology whatsoever. In fact, I have a model 1907 Winchester, which was designed in, oddly enough, 1907, a semi-automatic rifle. It was the first semi-automatic rifle used in military conflict. The French bought some of them very early in World War I. So we're talking about over 100 years, in this case, 109-year-old design that essentially functions exactly like an AR of today. You put a magazine in, you pull the trigger one shot, pull the trigger again, you get another shot. And this rifle from 109 years ago has a 10-round magazine. So we're talking about two different things here. When they're talking about assault rifles, they're actually talking about a military weapon with a selector switch on it that allows either semi-automatic fire or full automatic fire. What's actually used is just a sporting rifle. It has nothing to do with the military version at all except for looking like it. Appearances don't mean anything as far as mechanical ability to do things.
Let me push you on that a little bit just for the sake of playing devil's advocate for the listeners. But what do you say to folks who equate the two, even if they were to concede that the major difference in what they're calling an assault rifle and an everyday AR-15 is one has the ability to switch to full auto and the other does not? Even if they concede that difference, there are folks who say, but it still originated with the military. It was still built for military purposes. There's no reason in the world why a non-military civilian would have any use for that gun whatsoever. Why is it legal for people who aren't in the military, and why would you ever need one? What do you say to folks who have that question?
Let's see. A Volkswagen Bug and a Dodge Charger are both cars, right?
Yes.
One will go faster than the other, right?
Yes.
So nobody should have anything but a Volkswagen Bug because nobody needs to go as fast as a Dodge Charger will go, right?
By that logic, I suppose.
Yeah. Same. Mm. Yeah, it goes back to trying to blame an inanimate object for the acts of a human being. Had he chained the doors there and poured gasoline down the vents and lighted it, there would be more dead people than there are now. Mm. Not trying to make light of the body count, it's a horrible crime, but sure. It's just that. It was a crime. Crimes are not committed by inanimate objects. Assault is a behavior, not a device.
I imagine your answer will be along the same lines, but again, just for the sake of clarifying some misinformation out there, another thing that I've heard repeated multiple times in the media today are these comments about the type of ammunition that's used in what they call an assault rifle, what I'm going to call an AR-15. And folks who say, oh, that ammunition is just absolutely devastating and crashes through human beings. You line up 10 people in a row and you could shoot right through every one of them. What do you say to folks who say that ammunition has no civilian application?
More just outright lies. It's actually a very small rifle cartridge, as rifle cartridges go. As I mentioned earlier, one of the defining elements of an assault rifle is an intermediate power cartridge. That term means between the power of a pistol and a true rifle. Intermediate power cartridge is more powerful than a handgun, but less powerful than a full-size rifle cartridge. So by definition, if it's an assault rifle, it's using less powerful ammunition. The cartridge itself that the AR-15 uses, I assume we're talking about an AR-15 today. The cartridge that it uses was originally designed by Remington as a varmint cartridge. It was designed specifically to shoot crows and woodchucks with. In most states, it's not even legal to hunt deer with because it's not considered powerful enough. Mm. So it's not by any stretch of the imagination a big, powerful cartridge. In fact, part of its appeal to the military was the fact that it's so much smaller and lighter than full-size battle rifle ammunition. We talked about the German experience earlier. Was late as the beginnings of the Vietnam War, the U.S. was still using full power battle rifle M14, which fired 30 caliber cartridges much bigger and more powerful than that in the AR-15. And because it's so much bigger and more powerful, it's also a good bit heavier. A typical soldier's loadout was only about 100-110 rounds. By going to the smaller, lighter cartridge, soldier could carry as many as 300 on his person and about the same weight and bulk as 100-140 7.62 millimeter cartridges, which is what the M14 used. So saying it's a more powerful rifle is just baloney. It flies in the face of logic. It's a smaller, by design, by intent, a smaller, less powerful cartridge, so you can carry more of them and use them in that storm/assault role.
Well, listen, I know you've got a really busy afternoon. I've just got one more question for you, if you don't mind. Especially in the current political climate, there's been a lot of emphasis lately on de-emphasizing specificity of word choice, on not walking on eggshells when you talk to people. Do you think in this instance, the use of the phrase assault rifle or the misuse of the phrase assault rifle is consequential, is important, is something that's worth stamping out? Or do you think it's really much ado about nothing to emphasize the misuse of that term?
I think it's important to a degree in that it's impossible to have intelligent communication without making words mean something. The left is really, really famous for making words mean whatever they want them to mean. what is your definition of is? most people now probably aren't old enough to remember what I'm referring to there, but that's the typical thought process. It means what we want it to mean. So you might notice that all of the police officers on the scene there in the background, in any of the news footage you saw of the Orlando shooting, were carrying
right.
So the gun itself is neither good nor bad. It's just a tool. This is like blaming hammers for bad construction. it's just silly. So I think it is important to a degree that we nail people down on what they're talking about. When they say assault rifle, then they mean a semi-automatic rifle. It's like saying green when you mean red. It's without some specificity to your language, how in the hell do you communicate? Now, words mean something, or they should. They used to, anyway.
Gotcha.
Might point out one other thing in here, too.
Sure.
That was yet another gun-free zone. that apparently didn't work out too well.
Right.
That's where these things happen, where they're going to keep happening. Instead of railing about some inanimate object, I would be more concerned with making people able to take care of themselves and maybe even make terrorism illegal. Hey, we could try that.
Hey, there's a thought.
That probably never worked.
Well, listen, you have a wonderful afternoon. I appreciate you making time for me on such short notice. And I'm going to embarrass you a little bit here as we're recording. Tom is like a father figure to me. And so I want to take this opportunity to say happy Father's Day to you, Pops. I love you, and have a safe trip to your next class. And I'll talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, babe. I appreciate it.
We'll see you later.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
Plug of the week. So I understand you watched a movie today.
I did. I don't often get to watch movies, but I got to watch a movie today because I took today off to work on my Jeep, but I don't have my Jeep. So that's a whole nother story. So I didn't get to watch this in the theaters, but it's on Amazon now. I finally got to watch 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. Try to say that three times fast. Just 13 Hours. Basically, it's the Benghazi story as told by Michael Bay. So, it's Michael Bay, so there's lots of explosions. Also, it was Benghazi, so there was lots of explosions.
So, Michael Bay was a good fit for this.
Michael Bay was a very good fit for this. And I guess you haven't seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
It's very good. One of the main characters is the guy from The Office. I mean, not the character, but the actor is one of the guys from The Office. And he looks like the guy that was in Chuck. And so, like, every time I saw him, I kept thinking of Chuck. So that was a little distracting. But it's very Black Hawk Down-esque for obvious reasons. Anyway, like I said, it was very good. There was a lot of, like, timeline stuff. Now, the movie was based on the book that was written by the same name. So the guy that wrote that book, he actually, like, sat down and interviewed a bunch of the contractors and some of the CIA folks and came down with, like, a really good timeline and all that stuff. The one thing that I noticed after watching it is while they named the CIA station chief and painted him in a pretty bad light, almost from the opening scene, no one else from the federal government higher than the ambassador was name-checked. So yeah, so the station chief was seen several times on camera. You know, no, you're not allowed to go. You're not authorized to go. If you go, you're going to be in big trouble. But you never see who is telling the F-16 pilots at Aviano not to come. Or the AC-130 Spectre not to come. You just hear it's not coming.
Right.
The movie made it very clear that no help was coming, but no mention was really made of why. And I'm not even sure we really know why today.
No, I don't think we do. I mean, what possible use was letting them die?
Right?
I mean, what did we get out of that?
I don't know. Anyway, it was a very good movie. Again, Michael Bay, lots of explosions. Benghazi, lots of explosions. There actually was one part where there was like some scene discontinuity that got really distracting, where they were outside and it was dark, and then they were inside and there was light coming through all the windows, and then they would go back outside and it was dark, and then they would go back inside and there was light coming through the windows. It's like, come on, guys.
Don't you hate that?
Yeah. Overall, really good movie. Go see it.
Well, this week on Pacifiers and Peacemakers, Beth talks about her first time. Her first time carrying a gun in a holster, that is.
You know, Sean, there's so much happening in our world today that it was really difficult for me to decide what to speak about this particular week. From the shooting in Orlando to even the child being attacked by an alligator at Disney World. I mean, there's just so much horror and so many terrible things taking place. But I know that a lot of the bad things are what is encouraging people to get involved with firearms and firearms training right now, more so than ever before. And I highly encourage all women out there who have thought about it to go ahead and take that first step. Don't be afraid, don't feel alone, and certainly do not feel like you can't do it. You can. And you know, all of this had me thinking about my first holster carry. I did not start out carrying a concealed firearm on my body. Like many women, I started carrying in a purse. For me, it was easier. It was more convenient. I didn't have to dress to the gun or compromise my outfit to be able to take my firearm with me. But for those ladies out there who are ready to move beyond that step, let me encourage you. While concealed carry may be different for everyone, here are some thoughts about my first holster experience. The very first time I officially had my firearm on my hip in the quote-unquote real world, in other words, not at home or at the range or while training, I mean, I'll be honest, I was a nervous wreck. I had a multitude of crazy thoughts running through my head. What if my gun falls off? What if I slam it into something as I'm walking by? What if I remove it and accidentally leave it behind somewhere? Of course, I was also very self-conscious and very self-aware. After all, for the very first time in my life, my very own firearm was pressed up against my hip bone, and I was heading to work and to a business lunch at a very busy restaurant. My inside-the-waistband holster and my gun were a little bit heavier than I'd thought, and they were pulling at my business casual attire, and it was kind of an odd, pinchy feeling at first. But surprisingly, it quickly became second nature. If I could compare it to another experience that maybe my fellow females might relate to, it's kind of like walking in those designer platform pumps for the very first time, or wearing a fashionable but maybe heavy pair of earrings. Sure, you notice the discomfort, or the new or unusual sensations for a bit, but then it's soon forgotten as you go about your day, and as it becomes a norm for you, and those shoes and those earrings become a part of your everyday wardrobe. Now, physically, I got accustomed to the feel of my holster and my firearm rather quickly. And mentally, I was fine with the idea as well. I'd been carrying in my purse for a while, so having a gun wasn't new, and concealed carry wasn't new, and I had prepared myself for the significance of owning, carrying, and using a gun. But the transition from carrying nearby in my handbag to up close and personal on my body was a bit weird for me. And of course, like most other newbies, I was very concerned about printing, and I wondered all day long if anyone spotted the weird lump that seemed to protrude from my hip bone. The thing is, no one noticed, and I did my very best not to touch the firearm in my holster, not to try to readjust it or check if it's there, and not to think about it too much. You see, I don't have much luck with the conventional poker face, and I have a tendency to wear my heart on my sleeve, so I have to be careful not to give away too much of what I'm thinking or feeling. I certainly didn't want to be in the middle of a crowded lunch rush with my coworkers, blazing a message across my face that seemed to squeal, "Hey everyone, don't mind me, I'm just acting weird and distracted today because I'm carrying my firearm in my holster for the first time. Ta-da!" Unquestionably, carrying a firearm is so much more than picking out which holster works best for you. While there are so many options, styles, and preferences to consider, there are also many decisions, scenarios, and responses to contemplate. It's more than just carrying a gun. It's carrying the responsibility of being safe, confident, and fully trained. But you know what? It's something that I believe every woman can and should do, especially nowadays. Don't leave it up to someone else to protect you. Don't leave it up to someone who is not there or someone who cannot get to you quickly enough. Whether it be for you, a family member, a child, a friend, you need to be able to have the tool. You need to be able to have the means necessary to do something, to protect your life, to stand up against the evil in this world. And one simple way is by choosing the concealed carry lifestyle and choosing to be responsible. And choosing to carry that firearm, that tool for self-protection, everywhere you go, every day. Thanks again for the chance to share. I hope all of you stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
Fun with headlines.
Michigan couple battles insurance company for baby's survival. Those evil insurance companies. Gah, what are we going to do? A Michigan couple says their newborn son's survival may hinge on a surgery their insurance company refuses to cover. Jonah weighed just 3 pounds and 12 ounces when he was born in April. But within that tiny body was a devastating condition known as either trisomy 18 or Edwards syndrome. Jonah has an extra chromosome, something that happens in 1 out of 6,000 live births. In Jonah's case, it has resulted in severe heart defects. The prognosis is grim. Few infants with trisomy 18 survive beyond early childhood. While there is a surgery that could help, doctors at U of M, I'm assuming that's University of Michigan, have told the parents the risk outweighs the potential benefit and they will not do it. Wait, it's not the insurance company, it's the doctors saying that they won't do it? Hey, hang on a second. It's a very risky surgery, but we have someone in Columbus, Ohio at Nationwide Children's Hospital that is actually willing to do the surgery and wants to get Jonah there now, the father said. Now the parents are facing another roadblock. Their insurance through Priority Health will not pay for the procedure because the surgery is out of state. Now, let me just insert there. No, they're not paying for it because the doctors at what's probably a facility they would pay for have said, no, this is a bad idea. Article continues, even if he has a successful surgery, Jonah would likely require more surgeries after the age of 1. There is hope for the parents, though. Some children with trisomy 18 have survived a decade or longer.
A whole decade?
He might make it to 10. He's 1. Now, I'm very sympathetic to the parents, right? I understand that they want to get this done. And I will tell you that if either of my sons, jerks they may be, needed something that I could only go out of state for, I would go and I would get it done and I would figure out how to pay for it. Insurance or no.
Yeah, but when the doctors say, look, this is a worse cure than the disease.
Yeah, when they say the risk outweighs the potential benefit, that is saying to me that the child is probably going to die in surgery.
Yeah.
That's not good. Not the insurance company's fault. That would be the doctor's.
So imagine you're the chief technologist for the Federal Trade Commission. You'd probably be pretty confident that you know enough security to keep control of your cell phone, right? Well, it turns out that once again, people are the weakest link. Barron tells you all about it in
Tech Tips, Tech Tips, Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Barron.
So hey, Barron, what's new in the world this week?
Well, to start with, the chief technologist for the FTC had her phone number hijacked by an identity thief.
Well, how the heck does that happen?
The scam works like this. They make a fake ID of the target, they go into the current cell carrier store, pretending to be you, and ask for an upgrade. Depending on your account configuration, all they have to do is show ID, in this case it's been forged, bam, they get a free new cell phone, all with your phone number on your bill. You'll know immediately something's wrong because when they activate the SIM card for the new phone, the old one is immediately disconnected. So now your phone is useless except to call 911. So tell me, if you don't have a landline, how are you to find out what they've done to your service?
Ouch. But that's just a fairly simple case of physical identity theft.
But wait, there's more.
I knew there would be.
Remember that two-factor authentication I told you that you needed for all your accounts, like your bank? Where do they send the text messages to verify you?
Oh, crap. I don't like where this is heading.
because it's heading to the middle of a train wreck. Your phone serves as an authentication device that's now been compromised. When calling a service provider, they will see the call as coming from a phone you own. Couple this with a compromised password, and you're going to be in for a really bad time. Normally, this is done with a targeted attack using other data obtained from financial institutions or whoever the target is. By the time you can get to a local cell store to ask them what's going on, your bank statement says you're having ramen noodles for dinner for the next month.
Ooh. So what can people do?
The four major carriers all offer some form of additional verification that can be enabled when dealing with your account. Enable it. AT&T also offers an option to not be asked again when logging into their online portal. Be warned, if you do, they will disable the additional passphrase or PIN verification. If you have Sprint, good news for you, they enable this by default. Carriers have some duty in this region because, frankly, they're the gateway, and if they authorize someone else into your phone, that's a serious fault. The last thing they should be doing is blaming their customer and trying to make them foot the bill for their incompetence.
I was worried you're going to tell me I'd have to go all techno-wizardy, but that doesn't sound all that complicated.
That's right, Sean, and an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Thanks for the tip, Baron. It was good to talk with you, and I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the ten ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state, and make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. So where can you take a live, in-person, state-specific Law of Self-Defense seminar?
August 7th at Triangle Shooting Academy in Raleigh, North Carolina.
August 13th at Threat Dynamics in Sherwood, Oregon.
August 20th at the Nashville Armory in Nashville, Tennessee.
September 10th at CMP Talladega Marksmanship Park, Talladega, Alabama.
September 17th at Ungentlemanly Training in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
October 1st at the Hampton Inn in Bensalem, Pennsylvania.
October 15th at the Hampton Inn in Poughkeepsie, New York.
And October 22nd at Crossroads Shooting Sports in Johnston, Iowa.
Check lawofselfdefense.com for which states these classes cover and to see when more classes are offered, or email him and ask him to teach a class in your area.
But most importantly, when you sign up, make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to save 10%.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the Donate or Subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
So as you heard earlier in the podcast, I've already gotten contacts through Aaron's Project Blazing Sword LGBT-friendly firearms trainers map. I'll be taking 3 people to the range on Wednesday. Would you like to help? Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support. We could be all serious all the time, but especially this week we need some levity. What would you say to a song? Weird Fisk's an anti-gun song. I really hope you're not all that sensitive to bad singing.
In This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery.
So hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
So at the time of this recording, all the facts aren't known about the terrorist attack at the gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. I've already heard some jaw-dropping comments from the anti-gun crowd, but for the time being, I think it's a little too premature to address this story. My heart goes out to all the victims, as well as their friends and family, as well as the LGBT community, who have now endured a massive terrorist attack simply for their sexual preference. I'll be tackling the story next week, but until then, I felt that a lighthearted palate cleanser might be a better choice for this week's Audio Fisk. So Sean put up this video on Facebook, and the only way to describe it is a crazy cat lady who for some reason thinks she can sing. Her screen name is Psycho Super Mom. I can verify one of those things. Now what's she singing about?
The NRA still gets away with absurd hyperbole. Though it's a chore, let's try once more to make those morons see. No one's gonna take away your friggin' guns, so there's no need to carry on like scary Huns. And we're fed up with your fictions that all sensible restrictions are a plot to confiscate all of your guns.
I want to assure you all, neither Sean nor I messed with the audio. She really sings that badly. First up, a strong start by simply calling anybody who disagrees with you morons. It's good to know right from the start that this song is 100% in good faith. And nobody wants to take our guns? Who says? President Obama and Hillary Clinton have praised the gun confiscations in the UK and Australia. And Bonnie Schaefer of the Democrat National Committee recently said this.
I really don't personally think anyone should have a gun. I mean, that's just my own, philosophy. Nothing is ever solved, when you have a gun in your hand, except, the worst possible scenario.
Except the worst possible scenario? You mean like having to shoot back at people trying to kill you? And Hillary Clinton recently said this.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
If you watch the video, you'll see she has a running scroll of screen grabs from web pages that support her claims. She took the time to cite her sources, but didn't take the time to footnote it in the video description, so I had to dig up the stories by hand. You can find them in the show notes. The support for this segment was an AP story about Trump's NRA annual meeting speech, claiming Hillary wants to repeal the Second Amendment, and how that's a big fat lie. Who are you gonna believe, the anti-gunners or your lying ears?
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
As far as I'm concerned, any anti-gun person claiming nobody wants to take away our guns is lying or completely oblivious.
Background checks won't take away your friggin' guns. Even NRA members support them by the tons.
Do I need to relist all the reasons why this isn't true?
The answer to gun violence is not to have more guns. Though that's how their rote response usually runs. The risk of casualties is greater if every one of the theater says, I'm a good guy, and starts shooting off their guns.
So first up, her support for this is a Mother Jones article citing mass shootings being on the rise, despite there being no evidence for that. And of course, the anti-gun fable of armed defenders creating some sort of deadly crossfire. I think they watched the end of Reservoir Dogs one too many times.
And what kind of idiots think guns belong in schools?
I don't know. Maybe Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama? Not only did both of them enroll their kids in private schools with armed guards, but when they give a commencement speech, they bring the Secret Service and all their friggin' guns for their own personal protection. Oh, and there are lots of schools that allow students and faculty to be armed on campus. And there are schools that are locations for deadly mass shootings. Amazing how the shootings only happen in the schools that ban guns.
Manufacturers shouldn't have immunity from lawsuits if they market irresponsibly.
Luckily for all of us, they don't. She cites a Media Matters article. The gun industry and the conservative media team up to falsely attack Clinton for challenging the legal immunity for negligent gun dealers. Of course, that headline is patently false, as is her claim that gun companies are immune if they market irresponsibly. The Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act simply protects gun companies from lawsuits filed because somebody used their product illegally. So in fact, their immunity is the same as any other company. Except we needed a law to specifically spell it out because anti-gunners were using the courts to bankrupt companies and gun shops for violating no laws.
When people fetishize the weapons they adore, it makes you wonder what they're compensating for. Just saying. Meanwhile, every other nation has effective regulation, while our rates of suicide and violence soar.
And there it is. Don't tell me you didn't see that coming. Markley's Law. We're not going to even bother with the developed nations crap. I fissed that back in episode 81. Meh, whatever. Why is it the anti-gunners are so obsessed with the genitalia of total strangers? It's like they're begging whatever supreme being they happen to believe in for us to have at least something wrong with us. They have guns! They can defend themselves! And they know how to operate a screwdriver! Please make them have a teeny-weeny pee-pee, please! As Joe Huffman says, we have Supreme Court decisions, they have childish insults.
All right, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com. And guys, I'm from Nashville. I like can't stand bad music and people who can't sing. That was awful. Please don't do that to me again.
Oh, so I actually left a comment, which I absolutely recommend you do. Check the show notes, find the link, go leave a comment for this lady. I'll tell you, my comment says, "This is a hilarious parody of the gun controller mothers. The NRA is outdoing themselves by hiring this woman to perform this cringe-worthy song filled with every discredited anti-gun talking point, bad singing, horrible lip-syncing, and marginal guitar playing. Nothing could be better calculated to mock the demanding mommies than to have people think something like this was a real anti-gun song." So I got 11 thumbs up and a "you, sir, win the internet today." There's a couple of really good comments. And this video dispels once and for all the notion that leftists are more intellectual.
Or artistic.
Oh, or talented. God. Talented, that's for sure. Stuff that grinds my gears. Adam, why don't you go first this week?
All the sudden firearms experts in comment sections everywhere I go. Did you know that an AR-15 can mow down an entire platoon in less than 2 seconds? I learned that this week.
Yeah, you know what? The Army really ought to consider buying those AR-15s then.
Yeah.
The M16s and M4s they have, they're not that good.
No,
they're, at least they're not that good. They do their job, but I mean, like a whole platoon in 2 seconds? Can't do that.
Yeah. This is why I'm not on Facebook, people, to avoid comments like that.
Yeah, there's been a few. Oh, Michael Moore, the stuff that he's writing is just like, defund a working group filled with monkeys, like banging on keyboards in order to come up with statements this stupid. I mean, what do you do to come up with things that are this dumb?
My favorite is when you tell these people, it's like, that's not really how it works. And they're all like, shut up. I know what I'm talking about. As was discussed earlier in the podcast, you can't actually shoot 300 rounds in 9 seconds out of an AR-15. It doesn't happen.
I don't know how to deal with these people. It's not so much that they're just ignorant, it's that they're militant about it.
They're willfully ignorant.
It's proof of their superiority in that they don't know anything about this subject. They're so isolated from firearms that it's a proof of their virtue that they have not been sullied with actual knowledge.
Right.
And I've actually seen people commenting that it's good that I don't know these things.
Because if I did know these things, then I would be murderous, just like the rest of you.
Yeah, whatever.
So how about you, Sean?
Conspiratards.
Conspiratards. Are they back again? Is this the false flag?
Did they
leave? Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, false flag people need to get punched in the eye, but those aren't the ones that bother me so much. Because, you know, people screaming false flag, it's like, this is dumb, and you just ignore them. It's the ones who, given the choice between initial reports are always wrong and it's a giant government cover-up, always select giant government cover-up.
What's the fun in just, you know, reporters being wrong?
The first intelligent commentary I heard about what happened in Orlando, somebody was quoting Tam, and Tam was saying this is what happened. And it was, you know, the whole 3 hours that they were under fire and the cops didn't come in. Actually, the guy was holed up in the bathroom because the cops charged in and shot at him, and he retreated to the bathroom.
Ah.
And he had hostages in there. Well, he's not actively shooting anybody. You go into the drill for a barricaded suspect.
Right.
You wait. You talk to him. You try to get him out. You try to negotiate. You do everything you can, but he's not actually killing anybody right now, so you don't make it worse. And it took about 3 hours, and in about 3 hours, they realized nothing was going to happen, and he was going to start killing people, so they blew a hole in the wall. And then they used their Bearcat or whatever it was to ram the hole a little bigger so that they could get through. But these people are showing videos. Oh, look, these people are walking from a safe place right in front of the dangerous place where he's murdering people for 3 hours. And there's some Nimrod who's posting the picture of the same girl who's at every mass shooting, the crisis actress thing.
Oh,
if I see the crisis actress meme again, I'm going to punch somebody in the eye. Are you serious? You really think the world is such a great place that these things really don't exist except as a government conspiracy?
Well, I mean, there's a much better explanation. And that's that we're living in an alien simulation, a computer simulation, just like, you know, what Elon Musk says. And if you don't think Elon Musk is an alien, look at him. And he's trying to go to space.
Trying to go home.
Yes.
Maybe he can take Hillary with him.
Duh.
He could drop Hillary off with the lizard people she came from.
Right. And Mark Zuckerberg. I heard he's a lizard person.
Oh, whatever. Just, you know what? There's a really great, I think it's an article, back when it was Eject, 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 Bill Whittle.
Yes.
Did this whole article on conspiratards. And if you live your whole life believing in conspiracies, you're probably a loser. You're one of those people who has to be, I know something special.
I'm smarter than everybody else.
Yes, I'm special because I have secret knowledge. You know, it's the same as the guy on my ship who tried to tell everybody that he was actually a dragon in human form. No, he was a douchebag and he was a dragon in human form in his own mind because that would make him less of a douchebag. That's why people didn't understand him, is because he wasn't really human. Yeah, he was a douche was his problem.
We had a guy like that briefly at work.
Was this the guy who had done everything better than everyone else you've ever heard of?
Yes.
He had told us about that guy.
Yes.
Conspiratards just bug me because, you know what? The initial reports on anything are bad. Oh, there were multiple shooters. You know what? There were multiple shooters. One of them was wearing a uniform and was shooting back at the guy.
True.
And the other thing is how can anybody have any idea what was going on if some of the people are reporting that the first knowledge that they had that they were under attack was when somebody next to them got shot and was bleeding all over them because the gunshots didn't register as gunshots?
Because you're not expecting it.
Right. It's not where gunshots belong. And you're in a loud environment dancing, and all of a sudden, bop, 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 and you're like, whoa, I wonder what that is. Oh, dear, that's not good.
Right.
So this is the situation people are in, and now you're going to say, let's take everything that they perceived in that situation and then attempted to relate to a reporter times, like, how many people talk to reporters and try to build some unified field theory of what actually happened. Instead of, you know, maybe waiting for the evidence? Oh, no, that's...
No. Why would we do that? That seriously, doesn't make any sense.
That just gives the government a chance to cover it up.
Yeah.
God, well, stop it with the conspiratory. Just wait for the information to come out. It's not going to get any better. It's as horrible as it could possibly be. Don't try to make it worse by pretending it's something that it isn't. You know, you get several hundred people in a room and something weird happens and they're not expecting it. You're going to get a whole bunch of different stories as to what happened.
Yep.
Reality doesn't change just because people perceived it differently. So wait for the information. It's not a false flag. It was a douchebag with a rifle murdering people. Hopefully, at least at this point, we won't have like the video of somebody pulling a shotgun out of the trunk of the shooter's car and everybody watching grainy cell phone video from, you know, on the smallest screen possible saying, oh, that's an AR. And I'm looking at it going, that's not an AR. He's reaching across the top to rack the... That's a shotgun. I mean, even I could figure out it was a shotgun. I even own a semi-auto shotgun. And I could figure out that's what that was. Oh, it's an AR. I'm like, are you serious? Are you stupid? But, you know, conspiratards.
Right.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
If you're not already subscribed, subscribe in iTunes for all you Apple users.
Or in Google Play Music if you're an Android user.
And make sure to help us grow by sharing this podcast with your friends.
Show notes can be found at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode-96. We'll be right back.
This is a URS production.